Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network. Tutto ciò che volete sapere su telecomunicazioni media e che non avete mai osato chiedere.
Roll on 1992, that'll bring the letters in, and probably the boss down from upstairs. Talking of results, we're getting a larger than normal correspondence flow at the moment, and I'm doing my best to balance the straight news and feature reporting. I realise that some of the book and equipment reviews have taken a back seat since January the 17th, but I hope we'll be able to redress the balance shortly. Incidentally, as far as our listener contact programme is concerned, note that as from Friday, April the 5th, we'll be starting a new show called Sounds Interesting. The producer, Dorothy Weirs, is already planning the programmes now. So if you have a specific question about Holland, write now to Sounds Interesting at Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222 in Hilversum. I think we'll turn things around a bit this week and start with some tuning suggestions, both shortwave and medium wave, from our Pacific reporter, Arthur Cushion. He's on the line now from Invercargill, New Zealand.
The Caribbean Beacon in Willa, 1610 kHz, that's medium wave, has been promoting a shortwave program, which is rather unusual. KVOH Los Angeles is on the air on 9785 kHz between 0400 and 0800. And here's a recording of the broadcast of Caribbean Beacon, that announcement and station identification.
Wherever the shortwave signal is reaching, you should try it, 9785 on the 31-meter band, and then call me and let me know if you can pick us up.
You are tuned to the Caribbean Beacon, broadcasting from Anguilla, West Indies for Monday.
That's a recording of the Caribbean Beacon, recorded at our listening post southeast of the city, and gives you some idea of the excellent signals being received on medium wave from the Caribbean area. That reception around 1000 GMT, and the program KVOH is on 9785 0400 0800 UTC. New Zealand, and the BBC has a satellite link now into New Zealand, and a 24-hour-a-day of the BBC World Service is available in Auckland on FM, and shortly will be available in Hamilton and in Wellington, the latter on AM. A remarkable move, and particularly with the Gulf crisis, enjoyed very much by New Zealanders to hear BBC through their own FM band. And ZLXA, Levin, the station is now operating with a program for the radio amateur and radio listener called CQ Pacific. It's broadcast every Monday at 0800 UTC on 3935 kHz. It's put together by the New Zealand Radio DX League and the New Zealand Association of Radio Transmitters. From Alaska, KNLS advises that in March there'll be some frequency changes, and English will be 0800 to 0900 on 11715. From 1500 to 1600, they'll be using 9615. From 1800 to 1900, it's 11945. And from 2000 to 2100, they'll be on 11910. That's the new schedule coming up for KNLS, Anchor Point, Alaska. In Canada, Radio Canada's program to the Middle East is now being carried by DW Cologne on the frequency of 9555, as well as the Austrian radio using 11925. The broadcast is 0300 to 0500 UTC, and there's been a program change. It's now 0300 French, 0330 Arabic, 0400 English, 0430 Arabic, and the two frequencies, 9555 and 11925 kHz. And VOA Europe, they're being well received at the moment on 21700 at 0800 and 0830. There's news followed by popular music. In Dubai, in the South Pacific, the English transmission 0330 0400 gives the best reception. Four frequencies in use. 11945, 13675, 15400, and 15435 kilohertz. And that's the schedule for English from Dubai. South Africa, a difficult area now to hear, and Radio South Africa is not often received here in the South Pacific area. But at the moment, 11925 provides very good reception at 0455. They sign on this frequency just as Radio Canada sign off, and at 0500, RSA has a broadcast in Portuguese. That's on 11925 at 0500 in Portuguese. Ankara, Turkey. Our best reception is 0400 to 0450 in English, and two frequencies, 9445 and 17880 kHz, carry the transmission. In the Vatican Radio, their broadcasts are on a new channel. 9600 kHz replaces 9615. It's 2145 to 2330 on that channel, with English from 2205 to 2225 UTC. They're also using 11830 at that time, and this cable information just received from Vatican, and the tests already show that 9600 kHz is a good channel for this area, and the English again, 2205, 2225 UTC.
Technology time now, and our contributor Bob Tomolsky is on the line from London. Bob, I understand that at last we've got a sort of universal video recorder on the market.
Yes, indeed. It's here. It's arrived. It's in European shops. The worldwide video recorder is no longer a prototype. The NVW1 from Panasonic is a reality. Now, what this is a rather unusual video machine. For a start, it's extremely expensive. It's selling for around about just a little under £2,000 in the United Kingdom. Mm. And it has no tuner. In other words, you can't plug an aerial into it and receive programs. And it has no timer. You can't tell it to switch on and off at different times. But what it does do, and does do very well, is it takes PAL or NTSC or CCAM signals and converts them into any TV standard that you wish. And that's quite remarkable.
OK, so how does the unit work? I mean, you say, connect it up to a television, then what?
Well, basically, you connect it to a video source. That could be a camera, it could be a computer, it could be another video recorder. You feed the signal into the NVW1 and push, say, NTSC, and it will then make an NTSC recording on the machine from the video source. But it goes further than that. If somebody sends you a tape, say from the United States and you live in Europe, again, you can connect it to an ordinary PAL television, put the tape in and push the NTSC button, and it will convert that NTSC tape into PAL, which is suitable for your European TV set.
But, Bob, what about the quality? Because some US television programmes that have been converted professionally to PAL and shown on television here have very poor definition as a result of the transfer process.
Well, when I was in Japan and saw a prototype of this, the results were not very good. Pictures tended to jitter a lot whenever you got any movement. And that's what I was expecting. But now we've got the actual production samples through, I'm absolutely amazed at how good it really is. Yes, there is slight jitter, and yes, there is slight loss of definition. But it's not so bad that the ordinary man in the street would really notice. And in fact, I commented that the conversion that this machine does is actually a little bit better than I've seen on some television stations recently.
But you pay a price for it.
It is indeed very expensive. In the United Kingdom, it's selling for around about £1,700. And when you consider that it's a very basic machine, all right, it has hi-fi sound on it, but it doesn't have a manual record level, it doesn't have headphone socket, it doesn't have a tuner, it doesn't have any index search. In other words, it doesn't have any of the facilities that you would expect to find on a flagship machine. That is very pricey.
But do you think that it may be marking the start of an important trend?
Well, yes, indeed, because up until now, we've seen video machines that will, say, play an NTSC tape on a European TV set, but they've used what's called transcoding trickery. It's been a bit of a bodge. In other words, they've managed to do it, but the quality has not been very good, and you've not been able to, say, take an NTSC signal and copy it to a PAL tape. You couldn't do that. So this is, if you like, one very big step forward. And in fact, if I might mention, Panasonic have got this view that the VHS standard is more about worldwide communication than just straightforward entertainment. And they say, well, if we've got this de facto state where we've got NTSC, PAL and CCAM signals throughout the world, they can't do anything to change that, but it's their great dream to try and unify all those within a common VHS standard so that there will be no difference between those signals as far as VHS is concerned.
But you talk about standards there. I mean, there's VHS. There's also SVHS, which is a higher definition standard currently being used in camcorders by people like Panasonic and JVC. Can this machine cope with SVHS as well?
Yes, in fact, this machine has also got another clever little trick. It will take an SVHS tape and replay it, but not giving you the full benefits of the SVHS format. SVHS gives around about 400 lines of resolution. You can put an SVHS tape in this machine. It will play it on an ordinary TV set, but you'll only get around about 250 lines of resolution.
And what would you get normally?
Well, SVHS 400 lines, around about 260 to 270 lines on a good ordinary VHS machine.
Now, the reason that we're seeing this consumer technology coming down in price must be something to do also with the price of memory chips, which is falling.
Indeed it is. And this machine has got quite a lot of digital memory, which actually performs the miraculous tasks. It actually digitises the luminance, which is a black and white signal, the chrominance, which is the colour information, and the field frequency, and it stores it in a memory and then outputs it in the correct form for the standard that you want to record.
Is it a bit like storing one frame and then taking a sort of Polaroid picture of it?
Well, it's a little bit like that, yes. I mean, it uses the digital storage system. The reason why in the past we've had these sort of jerky movements on movement is because the digital memory can't be refreshed quickly enough. But, of course, memory chips and memory technology is advancing at such a terrific rate, it's now possible to be able to do this within a domestic product.
Well, thanks, Bob, for talking to us. Bob Tomolsky there on the line from London. Talking of lines to London, let's look at our answer line, Hilversum 724222.
This is Paul Balster from Wembley, Middlesex, England, for Media Network. A curiosity from the Voice of America on Saturday around 0850 UTC. 11735, 15160, 15195 and 21700 kilohertz are heard carrying a service calling itself VOA Europe, with a programme called Casey's Top 40. Whereas 1197 kHz medium wave are carrying a service which is being called VOA Europe with Jeff Roberts. Which of these services is correctly called VOA Europe, and what is the other service known as?
Well, Paul, 1197 kHz is the real VOA Europe. It's indeed in parallel with what we can hear on the cable systems here in Holland. What you're hearing on shortwave is programming taken from the VOA Europe service to fill a gap in VOA's English programmes on shortwave directed to the Gulf area. And talking of the Gulf, on Tuesday, the government-run Radio Bahrain started rebroadcasting VOA Arabic service programmes called Around the Gulf. And officials in Bahrain have in principle agreed to pre-record and rebroadcast 2 hours each evening of VOA Arabic programming, minus the newscasts, and put it out over all the transmitter facilities in the country, plus live presidential news conferences from Washington when they take place. All this is in addition to a special 50-kilowatt medium-wave transmitter installed in Bahrain by the US military a few weeks back to relay 5 hours of VOA in English. This move, in fact, is significant because it means now that the VOA can now transmit an audible signal in the Arabic language to the 500,000 Iraqi troops in occupied Kuwait and southern Iraq. Talking of Iraq, there's a new frequency down in the 60-metre band for Radio Baghdad, as Victor Guntilika now reports from Sri Lanka.
Radio Baghdad Baghdad is using 4600 kHz since the 15th of February. This is parallel to 3980-8350 kHz. There is no jamming at all as of today. Victor Gunatilaka for Media Network in Colombo.
To space now, or rather to the ground. The French Ariane Space Company has delayed today's planned launch of the Astra 1B broadcast satellite. As part of normal launch research and development, a third-stage engine was test-fired this past Tuesday at the propulsion test facility in Veran, France. Certain anomalies were deliberately introduced, but this led to an unexpected shutdown of the engine during the test. To ensure that same problem doesn't jeopardise Flight 42, now sitting out on the launch pad in Kourou, French Guiana, Ariane Space officials have decided to delay the launch by 1 or 2 weeks to allow for tests and analysis. In the meantime, we already have Astra 1A, which is already up there and working. And on one of the transponders, you'll find this station. RTL Fear, which means RTL 4. Ever since the advent of commercial television here in the Netherlands over a year ago, the Dutch media scene has been going through some profound changes. The various public broadcasters have seen their audience figures plummet. And as we reported here on Media Network, they recently hired a major consultancy firm to advise them how to survive into the 21st century. This media revolution in Holland was sparked off by RTL Veronique, today known simply as RTL 4. It's owned and operated by the European media giant CLT, whose headquarters are in Luxembourg. This past Tuesday, RTL 4 announced plans that are bound to send more shockwaves through the very foundations of public broadcasting here in Holland, as Eric Beauchemin now reports.
That's right, because RTL 4 has just announced plans to start up a new commercial radio station. The station, which still doesn't have a name, will be based in Luxembourg, as RTL4 spokesman Aad Everaerts told me.
Our mother company, CLT RTL in Luxembourg, who owns RTL4 also, has made a feasibility study to start up a radio station. There will be now made up a final business plan, which has to be approved beginning of March by the board of RTL4 and CLT. Then there will be a definite business plan, but we have a principal go-ahead to create a new radio station.
The station will begin operations in approximately 2 to 3 months. The broadcasts will be in Dutch round the clock and will be quite similar to RTL4's TV programs.
RTL4 television is a station with news, entertainment, series, films, children's programming, all kinds of that, entertainment and information, cultural programming. Now, the radio station will have a lot of music, but for a broad audience. We'll have news and information. We'll have maybe little games and other stuff, but not directly at the beginning because we foresee a period that we need to go to the goal that we have with the new radio station.
Where is this station going to be based?
In Luxembourg, of course. There will be the headquarters, but I cannot exclude that we make a certain part of the program in Holland.
So it'll be the same type of setup as the television station then?
You're right, completely right. The technical facilities are in Luxembourg, but we also have the technical facilities for the television in Luxembourg, but we produce also in Holland, of course, because we aim at a Dutch-speaking audience.
And how are you going to get the signal here?
By satellite, so it will be completely cable radio. The cable head ends will pick up the signal from the satellite, and it will go in the air from Luxembourg to the Astra satellite 1A.
In other words, people with a dish antenna will be able to receive the radio station throughout Europe. Now, Dutch holidaymakers are one of the main target audience of Radio Netherlands' Dutch service. We have two main transmission periods a day. Hundreds of thousands of Dutch vacationers head south to France, Italy and Spain during July and August. So isn't the new RTL4 station going to pose a serious threat to Radio Netherlands Dutch programs in Europe?
I don't think so, because this will be much more entertainment and all kinds of other stuff. And the things that are done by Radio Netherlands will be completely different, I think.
What about the employees? Are you going to be hiring a whole new team to produce this?
In this building in Hilversum, we have a lot of people who are experienced in radio, and some of those people will be involved, so we get even more work. But I think that at the beginning we will hire some more people to start up the whole radio project.
And RTL4 has other plans too. It's looking into the possibility of working together with local TV stations in Holland's major cities. And when the time's right, it might also set up another television station in Holland, RTL5.
RTL5 is an example of a way of thinking. If there will be a new competitor in the market, we are ready to start up RTL5 as a kind of complementary station to RTL4, maybe with series or films or news or other things. We have not decided yet, but we don't have to decide because there is no competition yet. But we are ready for many more steps if the market situation requires.
What's the situation with RTL4 now? Are you guys still in the red, or are you now making a profit?
No, we are not in the red anymore, but we have to earn money back from the investments that we did. We guess that, let's say, in the second year of our existence, we will make a little profit. But you never know exactly. But as the situation stands now, we are doing very well. We have more income than we spend.
What's your market share right now?
The market share in Holland on the cable is over 30%, and national, which means also the other households included, it's 27%.
That's a pretty respectable figure for such a short period of time, isn't it?
I think it's a world record in Europe, especially if you know that, for example, RTL Plus, it's a sister station in Germany, needed 5 years before getting some money back.
That was Art Everards of RTL4.
Network Investigation.
And for the mystery, we move to the phone line, Hilversum 724-222.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Julius Hermans from Vleuten in Holland. Jonathan, since a week I'm hearing Reykjavik, Iceland, on a new frequency of 6218. That's 6218. I'm hearing them there quite constantly. Whenever I try at night or in the early morning, they're always there on 6218. And last night, I heard them as well on parallel 9268. That's 9268.
So what's going on? Vian Steenstra, who lives in Friesland, one of Holland's northern provinces, did some research on our behalf. He found the newsroom at the radio station, Ricky Sutfapit, in Reykjavik, and asked them why they were suddenly transmitting for 24 hours a day, it seems, on three channels, namely 6218, 9268, and 3295 kilohertz. The answer was simply that Iceland's longwave transmitter on 207 kilohertz broke down in a terrible gale about a week ago, and until it's repaired, the station needs an alternative way of reaching the Icelandic fishing fleet, especially with the all-important shipping forecasts this time of year. Once the transmitter is repaired, you can expect the shortwave relays to disappear. Here in Hilversum, 9268 kHz was fairly strong yesterday afternoon at around 14 hours UTC. The frequency again, 9268. As you can hear, it's quite strong, but what are they saying? Your guess is as good as mine. To Lithuania now, and Sigitas Žilionis runs the Banga DX Club, a shortwave listening circle of around 25 who meet regularly in the capital of Vilnius. He's also involved with one of the newly formed independent stations that's operating despite the presence of Soviet paratroopers in the city. On the line from Vilnius, I asked Sigitas whether the disturbances in Lithuania, as it struggles for independence, had meant that listeners had turned now to foreign stations for news.
Well, the number of people who listened to international radio was very high even before. It was about 60%. We were making a little poll here, and it was about 60% who were listening. But now I think the number is even greater.
What about shortwave receivers out there? I mean, is it easy to get a hold of a shortwave receiver? Are they cheap? I mean, is it the Vega Selenas and those sort of receivers?
Well, now it is impossible. When all those events in Lithuania, in Baltics, in the Soviet Union began, all shortwave receivers were sold out. People became listening to the international radio. Now, if some receivers are brought to the shop for sale, so they are sold immediately.
You may have heard that here in Holland is a project that they're trying to start called Radio Free Lithuania, which would be a ship broadcasting in the Baltic Sea. Because they say there's censorship at the moment in Vilnius. But on the other hand, there are still people in the parliament building who are broadcasting, aren't they? Can they be heard?
The broadcasts are going from the parliament building and from another studio, so to say, a little studio elsewhere in Vilnius.
Right. But the Soviets haven't tried to take that over or take over the transmitter site in Kaunas, have they?
No. No, they haven't.
Uh-huh.
The transmitter sites are free. With the exception of Vilnius, of course. The transmitter sites in Vilnius, both the medium-wave transmitter site and the TV tower, this FM transmitter site, are occupied.
One thing that's been very strange for us here in Western Europe to understand is why Radio Moscow continues to relay Radio Vilnius.
Because we are paying for these broadcasts, rebroadcasts, and Moscow wants Lithuanians to rebroadcast their TV programs. So we are rebroadcasting their TV programs, Moscow. So Moscow first program and Moscow second program is seen in Lithuania, all over Lithuania. And as an exchange, Moscow rebroadcasts our programs.
So now we know. Sigitas Žilionis on the line there from Vilnius. As you may recall, back in December, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation announced that it would no longer be able to fund the external service, Radio Canada International, after March the 31st of this year. It's believed that Canadian authorities are now close to making a decision on what the future of the station will be as from April the 1st. Jeff White's following the situation for Media Network. He's on the line now. So, Jeff, any news?
Well, the latest, Jonathan, is that it's still up in the air. It's pretty well guaranteed that the Canadian Department of External Affairs will come up with some funding to keep RCI on the air, but the question is how much? According to various sources within RCI, there are a variety of different scenarios that are being discussed right now at External Affairs, and a decision could come as early as tomorrow or as late as a few weeks from now.
What are the best and worst case scenarios?
Well, RCI's current budget is just under $20 million a year. At this point, it looks like External Affairs may come up with somewhere between $10 and $13 million. So that almost definitely means some serious cuts. The worst-case scenario would probably be that RCI stays on the air, but with only relays of the English and French-language domestic service programs of the CBC. The best-case scenario would probably involve RCI doing some original program production in English and French, and then a few of the foreign language services might be kept, specifically Arabic, Chinese, and Russian. This means that language services like Spanish and Portuguese for Latin America might disappear altogether, and that, of course, has a lot of RCI employees on edge right now. But remember that this is all just educated conjecture at this point, and the final result could be either better or worse than what I've just described. We'll just have to wait for an announcement from the Canadian External Affairs people before we know anything for sure.
Thanks, Jeff, for the update. Well, with the events in Albania hotting up again, it might be an idea to keep an eye on Radio Tirana. There's English to Europe at 1830 UTC on 9480 and 7120 kHz, and again at 2230 UTC on 7215 and medium wave 1395 kHz. 9760 and 9600 kHz are other house frequencies to watch. In Ireland, David Butler reports that the Irish Supreme Court has decided that Atlantic 252, the pop music station which broadcasts towards the UK, did apply for planning permission for its giant long-wave antenna mast in the right way, thus overturning a ruling by the High Court last year. So, despite protests by the residents, the mast can stay. to Australia, and a couple of weeks back the ABC was subject to criticism over its coverage of the Gulf War. It even involved comments by Prime Minister Bob Hawke. Mike Bird's on the line from Melbourne, so have there been any developments?
It's been revealed that the ABC received more than 1,200 complaints of bias during the first week of the war. This prompted the ABC managing director, David Hill, to set up an internal inquiry into the alleged bias. Apparently, this has upset some members of the ABC board, as well as senior management. It's widely known that the government and the opposition have been unhappy about the ABC inquiring into itself. The government also has been reluctant to act because it didn't want to be seen to be interfering. But a few days ago, it announced that either an independent complaints body or the Australian Broadcasting Tribunal, which regulates commercial broadcasting in Australia, will carry out the role.
That's all we can squeeze in for the moment. Join us again in 7 days. Bye now.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.